Welcome to this episode of the Standout Job Seeker podcast presented by JobScan. I'm your host, Sydney Myers. Here's what I've got for you in this episode. I talked to Sean Gerard, who is the Program Operations Manager at Harvard Medical School, and he shared so many insights about his career, starting with making a career change from law enforcement to operations, then growing from a specialist into a leader and manager, and finally, how he got his job at Harvard and how he stood out in a competitive candidate pool. Sean shared so many ideas and tips, things that might seem small, but really added up. A lot of these ideas are really creative, things that you might not have thought about before. So listen carefully to this interview. You're going to see a real life example of making a career change, how to create opportunities, even if they aren't coming your way, and what little things you can do to stand out and set yourself up for success. And then the icing on the cake is that Sean has a really great voice, so he's great to listen to. Let's get into this interview. Please give the show 5 stars if you're enjoying it and leave a review letting me know what you enjoy the most so that I can do more of that. Let's talk to Sean. Okay, so Sean, right now in your career, you are Program Operations Manager for Harvard Medical School, which I can imagine, like, as a 10-year-old kid, that's generally, like, not the profession that most people think of. Was that always what you wanted to do, or how did you arrive at the career path that you're on right now?
It was not. You know, there's a big thing is that there's so many more jobs out there and so many more niche jobs than people realize. We just don't know about all of them. And a lot of them we don't even know about until we kind of happen upon them. But for me, you know, growing up, I wanted to be originally very young, a firefighter that kind of ran in my family. And then just the way life worked out and where I moved to, I was like, I'm not going to be a firefighter. I'm going to be a cop. So I went to school for that. And I was like, law enforcement's what I'm going to do. My whole life kind of led up to that point. And I finally got to work in that field and I found that I didn't like it. So I felt really not so much trapped, but like resigned to my fate of like, I'm just going to have to do this. I prepared for this my whole life. This is what my degree was in. This is what my experience is in. And this is just the way it is. And at best, I'll be able to kind of do something adjacent to it. And I was very fortunate that I kind of had some opportunities to get a graduate degree and then was able to kind of talk my way into a position that ended up really benefiting me and helping me pivot out of that role.
Nice. And you were in law enforcement for, I think, about 6 years, was it?
Yeah, about that, yeah.
Okay. So then when you reach that point where you want to change careers, how do you go from a career like that where you felt like this is everything that I've done has led up to this? How did you start the process of changing careers? Did you know what career you wanted to change to? Like, what was your first step there?
First of all, I was very fortunate. I had worked at the University of Denver for about a year, and I knew that they had an education benefit. I had never used it when I was there. I went off to a city police department for about a year, and that's when I kind of had this revelation that I wanted to change careers. So I went back to the University of Denver knowing that I was going to use that education benefit. And I decided I was going to go into emergency management. That's what my degree was going to be in. It was something that, you know, is adjacent to law enforcement, that a lot of that background and understanding really would benefit me experience-wise in. So that's what my plan was. And then it kind of ended up not working out that way again. And kind of just the serendipity of it led me to operations in the long run.
Okay. Yeah, I love that. Like, so whenever you decided to make a career change, you didn't go into it right away. You kind of found like a gap job where you could start that process of like maybe getting whatever training or certifications you needed while still like having a job and getting paid. Was that intentional, or did it kind of just happen that way?
You know, it was, I would love to say it was part of a grand plan, but it was really kind of like, I want to get out of this career as fast as possible. Left University of Denver on really good terms, and I kind of went back there and was like, hey, I want to come back. And they're like, we'd love to have you. And it just worked out that they had a supervisor position open too. So I was able to kind of like laterally transfer and then move up a little bit. And it really did benefit me that, you know, I had 4 days on, 3 days off. So I was really able to leverage my schedule to the full capacity and then leverage all the benefits I had there to my full capacity as well and really upskill.
Yeah. How did you determine like what kind of upskilling you needed to do? What, like, did you already have in mind? It sounds like you kind of already had in mind the career you wanted to go to, even though it didn't work that way. But so you already kind of knew like what training you would need for that.
Yeah. And not even that, like I just kind of knew that I wanted to help people. To me, I was like, it didn't compute in my brain. I was like, I can't just go get a psychology graduate degree, having done no psychology before, and, you know, completely pivot into that with no experience. That tends to not work well if you kind of go and get a graduate degree in something and don't have any experience. So I was like, this is something adjacent that I know my experience will apply to. And then it kind of worked out that I found a company doing emergency management, public safety stuff, amongst other things. And found my niche there outside of emergency management.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's interesting. Like, because it sounded like you had that same goal that you always had in your careers that you wanted to help people. It was just a matter of finding the career that allowed you to do that, but was also a job that you would enjoy. I like having that approach rather than just kind of like picking something random, but it's like, there is a common thread here. It's just a different role. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really rethinking, you know, my goal was to help people. And, you know, now I'm able to do that at Harvard Med School by, you know, organizing these programs that are helping doctors and healthcare professionals from all over the world come there, learn these skills and take them back to their home country. So it's really just like, how can you shift that focus or that lens?
Okay, so you got that job that was kind of like a gap job and started getting some of the training, but then like what's the at some point you have to like quit the job and make the leap to the next career change. So how did you do that without having experience in that role? How did you land the next role? How did you manage that part of it?
So it really benefited me that like I'm a professional development nerd. I'm always reading professional development books, podcasts, documentaries, everything like that. And I kind of went out and said, I'm going to do emergency management. So I'm going to do the best at this that I can. And I'm going to make myself the best candidate possible. So I was really getting into LinkedIn for the first time. Believe it or not, LinkedIn is not very popular among law enforcement. But I kind of got into it as I was moving into emergency management just to be able to connect with people. And learn a little bit about the field. And I ended up finding a book club run by an emergency management company. I got to meet some people there. I kind of got some insights from people who were, you know, 2 years in all the way up to 20, 30 years into the field. And at that point, I kind of identified this is the place where I want to work. And I reached out to the person who ran the book club, who I talked to a lot, and said, hey, can I have an internship? And just kind of kept sending that message every few weeks until they answered me and said, yes, you can have an internship.
Wow. Okay. So like the job wasn't even there wasn't a job. You just asked for it. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had, I guess, flirted with the idea of internships before and kind of what that would look like. And I had kind of been going to this book club for, you know, 6 months and just explaining my thought process, my ideas, and I'm a huge reader. So, you know, even though I didn't have emergency management experience, I was going into these book clubs and contributing significantly to the conversation. So it kind of let them almost not interview me, but get to know me in that phase.
Yeah. How did you find the book club?
LinkedIn just popped up on my feed one day.
Wow. And it was local, I guess. It was in person.
All virtual. I think the most we had at the peak was like 3 or 4 countries involved.
Wow. Man, that's like, that's such a stroke of what, like you saying serendipity is like, but that's also so true is like, I hear so often that networking is so important and it doesn't have to be like going to a networking event. Like it doesn't have to be like that. Networking just means like getting to know people and going to different, like a book club like that. So then how many times did you have to message him about the internship before he gave in?
I don't remember. I probably should go back and look at the messages, but it was certainly no less than 3 over the course of a few weeks. And it was kind of like I messaged him. He didn't answer. He was probably too busy. And I messaged him again. And then he was like, oh, let me get back to you. And then I followed up on that. And then kind of, you know, just kept pushing and not like, and that's the hard part here is you have to figure out what that line is of like, you don't want to be messaging this person every day. Like, hey, what's going on? Hey, you told me you're going to respond to me. You want to find that nice balance of like, you know, message maybe a week later, maybe 3 weeks later, maybe 5 weeks later and say, hey, I just, but you know, before I kind of move on with my life, I wanted to check in again. So it's really finding that balance.
Yeah. Was it a paid internship or like how did you manage the budget during that time?
Yeah, so it was a paid internship and I was, again, very fortunate that I had 4 days on, 3 days off. And, you know, two of those days I finished at 2 p.m. So I ostensibly had like 3-4 days out of my week where I could work almost full days at this internship. And then, you know, was able to prove my value and really take advantage of that opportunity and kind of find problems to fix and find things that I could do to be useful. And eventually, you know, they kind of said, what's your goal for the future? And I said, I want to work here and made that known and parlayed it into a full-time gig.
Wow. Okay. I like that idea of like being resourceful. Like maybe not everyone is in that situation, like the same situation you were, but just finding what the opportunities are, being resourceful with it. So I'm curious about like doing the internship rather than just like going out and applying for the job. Was the thought process there because you didn't have the professional experience yet?
Yeah, being in that book club was a really great opportunity for me to, you know, be alongside people who had been in this field for 20 years, the people who are hiring for those positions. And they really kind of expressed to me that, you know, emergency management especially, like degree in and of itself will not get you a job. You need to have some kind of experience. So I knew I was going to be drilling away at entry level positions for a long time before I heard anything or staying longer at this kind of gap job to get some volunteer experience. There's lots of great volunteer organizations, Red Cross, Team Rubicon, stuff like that. So it was a little bit of that, but it was also, you know, that I loved the culture of this company and, you know, like the book club, I was like excited to go to every week. And I was like, if this is what they're doing, like for this hour of the week, what are they doing the rest of the time?
Oh yeah. And then how long did you have the internship, like doing that kind of gap? How long did that process take to get the experience you needed, get the training you needed to parlay that into a full-time role?
So it was about 3 to 6 months. Somewhere in that timeline. But it was also so that I went into that thinking, like, I'm going to be an emergency management person. Mm-hmm. And by the time I kind of reached the end of that and the full-time role became available and I got hired into it, it was, I can't say enough things like how grateful I am for this company that they kind of recognized something that I didn't even recognize, that, you know, I was very gifted naturally in operations and project management. And they kind of came to me and said, hey, you're really good at this naturally. Opened my eyes that most people aren't, that I always thought that everybody thought that way, but they didn't. So I'm grateful for that.
So then the full-time role you got wasn't actually the role that you thought you were going to get. Was it like in a totally different field or just... Oh,
well, okay. It's I mean, not totally different because like they were doing a lot of emergency management stuff at the time, but I was not contributing as much. I thought I was going to use my emergency management degree and skills to go do emergency management work, but it kind of just gave me a common language and vernacular to work on the operations and project management of that company doing those things. So I could talk to contractors who are on the ground doing emergency management and know what they're saying when they're using these acronyms and what the process looks like and timelines and that kind of stuff.
Okay. So then like, I'm curious. So when you had the internship, they know that you're like transitioning careers. This is not your background completely. So you're kind of just like gaining that experience and that knowledge. So then how do you show when you have transitioned from I'm just trying to gain experience and knowledge to I can now contribute in a full-time role? How are you able to display that to where they no longer saw you as a career changer and more just like, okay, he's ready for the next step?
It's a little bit of like, I always say, like, you have to make your what you want known. You know, they're not going to just come over and be like, hey, we'd love to give you a job. That's very rare. But if I'm telling them regularly, like, hey, my long-term plan is I want to work here. Like, I'm committed to this. I love what we're doing here. I'm grateful to be here, that kind of thing. But it's also everything I did, I always try to do as high quality as I can. So on top of that, like everything you're doing, you're just doing the best at it that you can. Also seeing like, where can you find a problem? Where can you add value? So, you know, if I was given a project to like look at a process, I might say, hey, rather than just looking at this process, can I completely overhaul it? Can I clean mm-hmm. up where it's captured and, you know, make it, you know, 10 times better than they were expecting to get out of this?
Okay. And then I'm wondering, like if I were listening, like my reaction would be, so like, were you just working like 80 hours a week? Is that what you mean? Where it, like, you're just kind of putting in a lot of overtime, or is it's like, it doesn't require that. It was just like, while I was on the job, I took more initiative.
I'm very big about work-life balance. Very rarely have ever put in 80 hours a week. So it's not that. It's really finding that initiative and kind of figuring out, you know, if I'm tasked with this project, how can I do this, you know, 110% when maybe they're expecting 90 to 100%.
Okay, interesting. So then, so you did that and then you were offered the full-time role. So then what was that role like? So that's your first role as an operations specialist. Were you still learning at that point? Like, how long did the career transition take completely to where you're like, okay, this is now the career that I'm in?
It was probably about a year, maybe a little bit less.
Okay.
It was an interesting transition because it came so naturally to me that like, I didn't even realize that like, you know, what do we need an operations specialist for? Like, don't we just follow the process and like everybody updates it as we go along? And like,
that's what you're there for.
Exactly. That kind of thing of like, it came so naturally to me that like, it was more so recognizing like, this seems obvious. Oh, that's best practice. Like that's, mm-hmm. that's what we're going to struggle to get other people to get involved in and get on board with, that kind of thing. And then, you know, doing some self-study, meeting, again, trying to meet and connect with people who are experts in the field of operations and project management and figure out what kind of skills, best practice tools I can bring into that in about 6 months to a year.
Okay. So then, I'm curious, like a lot of this sounds like it worked out exactly the way that it needed to, and going from kind of having an opportunity to get a gap job, getting the internship, and now being offered the full-time role. Were there any challenges that you faced along the way of trying to make this career change?
Nothing specific. I think it was what really helped me with it is I'm always trying to do right by people. I always said to like trainees when I was in law enforcement, like you have to decide what you're going to do when you find that wallet full of cash far before you find it. Like you need to know today what you're going to do when you find that 2 months from now. And really just trying to do right by people, trying to do the best that I possibly can. And that is really what benefited me the most of like, I was able to go back to the University of Denver because I had left on such a positive note and I had done such a solid job while I was there.
Yeah. I think also like, it sounds like you were really proactive. So like a lot of the challenges that might have come up of like, maybe I don't know anyone in that role or I don't have the experience or, you know, whatever challenges, because you were proactive, you were able to address those challenges before they even came up, like by doing the networking and taking the initiative and so on.
And that's, again, that's probably my personal bias, like not seeing that to like, to me, I was going into a new field a couple of times in these small pivots. And I was like, it just is natural to me to reach out to 10 people on LinkedIn and say, hey, I see you're the director of so-and-so for this company. I'm just moving into this role. Like, do you have 15 minutes to chat and, you know, talk to me about what you do and see if you have any advice for me? Wow. 9 times out of 10, they may not answer, but that's a great way to just kind of get a little bit of insight, get a peek into the field. And that was one of the things that really actually helped me in realizing that I needed to go get some real life experience, was one of those LinkedIn conversations I had.
Yeah, that's interesting. I personally never would have thought to do that. Like I've reached out to a few people that I looked up to and I'm like, I'd like to talk to you, but it's only been a few and they're so busy. But I never would have thought to do that. What made you think I'm starting a new role? I should reach out to people who have had this role.
I must have heard it on like a podcast somewhere. Oh, okay. Like I listen and learn like so broadly from like airline safety to like the history of like the English language, you know, stuff like that is just so broad. So I must have heard it somewhere. And I'm like, I felt trapped at the time almost. I was like, I have nothing to lose. Like what the worst they do is they don't answer me.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've heard that too, that informational interviews are really important. Because one, you get that information, you get to know, like, what is this role like? What are you looking for when you hire? What, you know, kind of training or experience do I need? So it's helpful for that. But you are also building your network. And now this person, they know you personally, they know your experience. And so if you get to know enough people, kind of like how you got the internship, if you get to know enough people, there might be somebody who that connection is worthwhile. So yeah, I like that. Okay, so after making this transition into operations, you were in at that company for, it looks like about 2.5 years. You got up to being an operations lead, and then you went from operations lead to program operations manager at Harvard Medical School. Now, this is something that I don't see very often when looking at career paths where you get a promotion through another company, like usually you earn a promotion and then you parlay that into that same role at another company. So how did that process work, and going from being the lead there into getting the management role, what was that job search like and making that growth?
So it was fairly straightforward. I had kind of applied to just a handful of things at Harvard. You know, it had popped up on my LinkedIn, and I had great respect for, you know, Harvard and higher education as a whole. And I was like, you know, I'm always looking for like, what are the kind of cultures, the missions that I want to be a part of? And Harvard was definitely one of them. So I'd applied to a couple of roles, and I'd actually gotten a call back for a different role. And it was like a Friday afternoon. I met with a recruiter. She's like, hey, I just want to do a quick screening call. And like in the first 5 minutes, she's like, I just want to verify that like you're okay with this salary. And it would have been a significant pay cut. And I was like, I am not at a point in my life where I can do that. But I like had joked with her a little bit. I was friendly. I was like, let me save you some time. Let me get you out of here and get you to your weekend quicker. Have a good one. Something I said must have like just clicked with her. And she's like, you know, if you have anything else you're interested in, let me know. And I had put forward the position that I'm in now and said, yeah, I had applied to this one. I'm interested in this one. And when they reached out to me to interview for this position, they said, you know, you had spoken to a recruiter earlier. She said good things about you and, you know, forwarded your resume to us.
Interesting. So I can imagine applying for a job at Harvard, there's got to be a lot of competition around that. Do you know, like, what were some of the things that you did to stand out? There must have been so many other applicants. What do you think helped you to stand out in that job search?
It's kind of three things. So one is a little bit of serendipity. So they had said, oh, we're making this transition to Monday.com. It says you have some Monday.com experience. And I had to be like, stop. I love Monday.com. I'm not sponsored by them, but I should be. Like, I spend my whole day in Monday.com. I love it. So that really played in my favor. And then it was also, I have always have this idea, I think Walt Disney said it, that like people feel perfection. So I'm always trying to be as buttoned up as possible, as put together. I am like at least 5 minutes early to every meeting. I'm going to have, if you ask me to do a task, I'm going to do as perfectly as I can at it. That way, you know, as a candidate as a whole, when they think back and they're like, well, what do we think about Sean? And they're like, oh, well, he showed up early. He was put together. He had answers for all of our questions prepared. They didn't sound like they were, you know, scripted, like all that kind of stuff. And then on top of it, it's a little bit of preparing for those meetings. I think especially in a virtual interview environment, there's no reason you shouldn't have at least idea of where you're going to answer these general interview questions. Like, you know, you're going to be asked your strengths. You know, you're going to be asked your weaknesses. You know, you're going to be asked, tell me about a time when you were stressed, things like that. So having those answers, not scripted, but, you know, prompts of what you want to make sure you cover. And you can even pull it up on your screen when you're doing these interviews. So that way you know you make sure you hit your key points. And then I also always, when I go into an interview or whenever I'm going to meet someone in general, I'll go do a little bit of research about them on LinkedIn. It's a great resource. I always try to pick one thing that I'm genuinely interested in to connect with that person on during the meeting. So that way, you know I can go into that meeting and say, hey, I see you have this certificate and this master's degree all in the time that you're at this job. Which one of those did you find more useful and why is that? Mm-hmm. And that way I get a little bit more insight and build this connection. And then finally asking important questions.
Oh, important questions. Okay, so what are some examples of that?
So the questions that I always ask in job interviews or any kind of professional meeting is, what are some of the challenges of this role that, you know, you expect this role to face? That way they know you're thinking about it, and you also get an opportunity to answer that. Like, oh, well, you know, we have really busy stakeholders who are hard to get time on their calendar. You're like, oh, I've dealt with that before. Here's what I've done to deal with that, or here's what I would do. I also ask what skill set or personality type is missing from your team that you're looking for in this role. That way, again, it's another chance to sell yourself a little bit. And then I always close out anything like this with, is there anything I haven't asked that I should have? And that really opens the door on open-ended, hey, what still do we need to cover that we haven't?
Yeah, I like that. And then what about your resume? Were there, like, before even getting the interview, like, again, among so many applicants or candidates, like, what are some things that you did on your resume to stand out in what was probably a competitive candidate pool?
Yeah, so unfortunately, in the competition of the job market today, we have to be tailoring resumes to every position that you apply for. Mm-hmm. So what I found really useful was to kind of look at the job description, copy that, paste it into ChatGPT, and then ask ChatGPT, hey, I'm applying for this job. Here's my resume. Here's the job description. What should I reword to get past the AI screener? What should I make sure that I cover about my experience that's crucial to the role? Is there just a word I should change? So I don't advocate for letting ChatGPT write your resume, write your cover letter, but definitely leveraging that as, like, you know, we all have a red slice, these unknown unknowns that we don't even realize. How can you use these tools like generative AI to help you uncover those and position yourself as a better candidate?
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, that's the whole thing JobScan was based on, is like tailoring your resume. It helps so much for a lot of different reasons. I mean, one, you talked about if there's some kind of screening process or ATS they're using, but even when the human recruiter gets it, they're thinking about hiring for the role that is at their company, which might be different from that same job title at a different company. And so you need to make sure that you're showing them exactly what they're looking for. And so, yeah, tailoring it is totally necessary. Did that process take a long time for you? Or I guess another question would be, like, regardless of how long it took, was it worth it? But was it kind of time intensive for you?
It is a little bit. That's why I think, you know, generative AI coming up in the last couple of years has been a huge benefit for that. Because it can really cut down on that time. You know, previously you'd have to read a role, pull out the key points or some keywords, and then figure out where you're going to work them in. Yeah. And now you can kind of say, like, what are the top five things that I should make sure I cover in my resume? And you may not be able to cover them. You may say, I don't have experience in this thing. But that's where you, in your cover letter, you can get creative and say, hey, I've never dealt with this specific scenario, but I've done this, and that may apply. So it is a little bit time intensive, but you are much better off doing that and investing the time. And, you know, if you're applying to 50 jobs a day, cut that down to 10 and get those high quality applications in.
Yeah. Quality over quantity. And I agree on how generative AI can help, because the one thing with writing a resume is, like, not everyone is a writer. And so it's like, I know what I did in my career, but writing it into a bullet point is really, really difficult. So we added that recently, because, like, we would show the skills, or like, this is what you need to put on your resume, but there's also this recognition that's like, even if you know that, it's hard to like, well, how do I word it or how do I write it? And so, yeah, I find that so helpful. And then I think also that point about like you, it might reveal skills or experience that you don't have, which in itself can be helpful for knowing, like, should I even apply for this job? Like, I remember when I would be looking for a job and I would be tailoring my resume, and there would be jobs that I really wanted, like I wanted to apply for that job. But when I started tailoring my resume, I realized, like, you know, I don't really have the experience that they would be looking for. Like, this probably isn't a good match for me. So it helps to drive up the quality, like you're talking about, over the quantity. Yeah.
And I think that does work both ways, because you may look at a job. I've definitely looked at jobs and like started to put together a resume in the past and been like, I'm not going to be successful at this job. Mm-hmm. I know that. And I think there's a key difference between recognizing that you won't be successful and the employer won't be happy. So like that's going to equal failure in the long run. But also like for the job that I'm currently in as a program operations manager, it was very heavy on event management. They had a lot of questions about that. And I kind of said, hey, I have limited experience in that. That's not where my primary domain is. Here's the experience that I do have, and here's what I would do to improve that. So that way, at least they know you know what you're getting into. You're not going to be in over your head, and you're not lying and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I would say, like, just from being someone who's hired people, one of the most important skills, like I can't overemphasize it, is being a good learner. If you've demonstrated and can show that you are a good learner, that makes so many things so much easier, because everyone is going to have a skills gap. Like there's no perfect candidate. So there's always something that every candidate has is like, oh, I wish they had experience with this. But the ones who have shown that they are able to learn, they enjoy learning, they're good learners, then that kind of fills in that gap for you. It's almost like that skills gap goes away because I know you can learn it. Yeah.
And really key, you can show that over the course of a hiring process. So if you apply for a job, I actually did this for my current job. I applied for the job. And they said, hey, we use this specific software. Do you have experience with it? And I said, no, I don't have experience with it. And then by the time I got to the next round of interviews, I was able to go in there and say, hey, I don't have experience with this. I know we talked about that previously, but I've signed up for their online resource academy, and I'm working on this specific certification. That way, you know, you're showing that you're a learner and you're actually going out and doing this thing and kind of making progress.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good point. And even if you don't get the next interview or something, it's like almost using interviews as learning opportunities in themselves. It's like you're going to learn more about what skills or qualifications you might need, or just like developing your interviewing skills. And so I interviewed another career professional who works here, actually, Rob. And he said kind of the same thing. Like he would do an interview, even if he didn't think he would get the job or maybe didn't even really want it. He would do it anyways in order to get practice or to gain that kind of knowledge. So I like having that mindset and being proactive, I think, is another key.
You can also use that as a way to figure out how to sell yourself better. So if you are applying for these jobs, and especially when you're making that career pivot and you kind of don't know those unknown unknowns, you mm-hmm. don't know where your gaps are. You don't know what your resume doesn't say about you. Because especially after you've applied for like 100 jobs, your resume just reads to you like you're the greatest thing ever. And that like, I don't know why I'm not getting hired. But in reality, there are gaps there. So if you are having these interviews and you're getting asked these questions where suddenly you don't know the answer to that question, now you can figure out like, what experience do I have in the past? If I'm applying for a project management job, I don't have any project manager experience. What did I do that, like, you know, was managing a project? Oh, well, I did actually do that thing at work that one time. And, you know, that was managing a project. So how can I extrapolate those skills and sell myself better?
Yeah. Yeah. I think transferable skills they're so easy to overlook, because like sometimes you can get stuck, like you can't see the forest for the trees. So it's mm-hmm. like I might think that I've always only done this job. But there's probably like tasks in there or responsibilities that are very similar to another job. Like, just because it's a different job title doesn't mean it's not the same things. So yeah, I like kind of looking at it from a fresh perspective. I think that could help. Okay, so this was so helpful. Like, so many nuggets and like really practical ideas of things that I never would have thought of. If you had to sum up like making this difficult transition from being in law enforcement to now being where you are now, what do you think was the key that made that process or made you successful in making that career change and then growing a completely new career?
I really think it's being a learner and open-minded that, you know, in my free time, I'm just exploring and learning new things. And, you know, now I can go into a room with this type of person and have a full blown conversation. I've rarely, if ever, been in a conversation or in a room with someone where I couldn't, you know, have a conversation with them and be interested in it for a few minutes. And it's also just being open-minded, looking for that opportunity, making the ask. And, you know, sometimes you'll find opportunities where you least expect them, or sometimes you may get a little bit of help from that person that you joked with on a call on a Friday and got them out of there early. It's really just being a learner and being open-minded.
Yeah.
Looking for that opportunity.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing these practical tips. I know it's going to be helpful to a lot of people.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. Thank you for having me.